This morning we're continuing in the fifth canto, 18th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The chapter is entitled, The Residents of Jambudvip Offer Prayers. And today's text is number 9. May there be good fortune throughout the universe, and may all envious persons be pacified. May all living entities become calm by practicing bhakti yoga, for by accepting devotional service, they will think of each other's welfare. Therefore, let us all engage in the service of the Supreme Transcendence, Lord Sri Krishna, and always remain absorbed in thought of Him. Purport. The following verse describes a Vaishnava, Banchakalpattarubhyaschakripasindubhyaevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Just like a desire tree, a Vaishnava can fulfill all the desires of anyone who takes shelter of his lotus feet. Prahlad Maharaj is a typical Vaishnava. He prays not for himself, but for all living entities, the gentle, the envious, and the mischievous. He always thought of the welfare of mischievous persons like his father, Hiranyakashipu. Prahlad Maharaj did not ask for anything for himself. Rather, he prayed for the Lord to excuse his demoniac father. This is the attitude of a Vaishnava who always thinks of the welfare of the entire universe. Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Dharma are meant for persons who are completely free of envy, parama nimat saranam. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj prays in this verse, kala prasidatam. May all the envious persons be pacified. The material world is full of envious persons, but if one frees himself of envy, he becomes liberal in his social dealings, and can think of others' welfare. Anyone who takes up Krishna consciousness and engages himself completely in the service of the Lord cleanses his mind of all envy. Manaschabadram bhajatadar hoksajay. Therefore, we should pray to Lord Nrisingadev to sit in our hearts. We should pray, Behir Nrisingo Hridaye Nrisinga. Let Lord Nrisingadev sit in the core of my heart, killing all my bad propensities. Let my mind become clean so that I may peacefully worship the Lord and bring peace to the entire world. Srila Bishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur has given us a very fine purport in this regard. Whenever one offers a prayer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one always requests some benediction from Him. Even pure Nishkam devotees pray for some benediction, as instructed by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his Shikshashtika. Ayi nanda tanuja kinkaram patita mam vishame bhavam budhau kripaya tava para pankaja shtiti duli sadrisham vichintaya. O son of Maharaj Nanda Krishna, I am your eternal servitor, yet somehow or other I have fallen into the ocean of birth and death. Please pick me up from the ocean of death and place me as one of the atoms at your lotus feet. In another prayer, Lord Chaitanya says, mama janmani janmanishwari bhavatad bhaktir ahaituki tvai, life after life, let me have unalloyed love and devotion at your lordship's lotus feet. When Prahlad Maharaj chants Om Namo Bhagavate Narasimhaya, he prays for a benediction from the Lord. But because he is also an exalted Vaishnava, he wants nothing for his personal sense gratification. The first desire expressed in his prayer is Svastiastu Vishvasya. Let there be good fortune throughout the entire universe. Prahlad Maharaj thus requested the Lord to be merciful to everyone, including his father, a most envious person. According to Chanaka Pandit, there are two kinds of envious living entities. One is a snake, and the other is the man like Hiranyakashipu, who is by nature envious of everyone, even of his father or son. Hiranyakashipu was envious of his little son, Prahlad, but Prahlad Maharaj asked a benediction for the benefit of his father. Hiranyakashipu was very envious of devotees, but Prahlad wished that his father and other demons like him would give up their envious nature by the grace of the Lord and stop harassing the devotees. Kala prasidatam. The difficulty is that the kala, envious living entity, is rarely pacified. One kind of kala, a snake, can be pacified simply by mantras or by the action of a particular herb, mantrao shadi varsha sarpa kalakena nivaryate. An envious person, however, cannot be pacified by any means. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj prays that all envious persons may undergo a change of heart and think of the welfare of others. If the Krishna consciousness movement spreads all over the world, and if by the grace of Krishna everyone accepts it, thinking of envious people will change. Everyone will think of the welfare of others. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj prays, Shivam mito diya. In material activities, everyone is envious of others, but in Krishna consciousness, no one is envious of anyone else. Everyone thinks of the welfare of others. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj prays that everyone's mind may become gentle by being fixed at the lotus feet of Krishna, Bhajatadad Hoksaje. As indicated elsewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam, Savai Mana Krishna Podara Vindayo, and as advised by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita 18:65, Manmana Bhava Mad Bhakta, one should constantly think of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Then one's mind will be certainly cleansed, Cheto Darpana Marjanam. Materialists always think of sense gratification. But Prahlad Maharaj prays that the Lord's mercy will change their minds and they will stop thinking of sense gratification. If they think of Krishna always, everything will be all right. Some people argue that if everyone thought of Krishna in that way, the whole universe would be vacated because everyone would go back home, back to Godhead. However, Srila Bishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur says that this is impossible because the living entities are innumerable. If one set of living entities is actually delivered by the Krishna consciousness movement, another set will fill the entire universe. Shvastyastu vishvarsha kala prasida tam jayhantu bhutani shivamito diya monascha bhadram bhajatarad hoksaje aveshatam no matirapya haituki. May there be good fortune throughout the universe and may all envious persons be pacified. May all living entities become calm by practicing bhakti yoga, for by accepting devotional service, they will think of each other's welfare. Therefore, let us all engage in the service of the Supreme Transcendence, Lord Sri Krishna, and always remain absorbed in thought of Him. Mukham karoti bachalam bhangam langayate garim yat kripa taraham bande Sri Guru Dinatadanam. So the influence of the demons is very powerful, especially in this age, the Kali Yuga, or as is mentioned here, when such a demon as Hiranyakashipu is able to conquer the whole universe, then the demoniac propensity, the demoniac culture, asurika bhava, the demoniac mode of life, mentality, is actually forced upon everyone. Now, why is that possible? Well, that's because, as Srila Prabhupada explains, this material world is the world of asurika bhava. We see here in the word-for-word translation, Prabhupada translates Kala, the envious, and in parentheses he puts almost everyone. So that is the qualification for coming here to this material world, that everyone is Kala, envious of Krishna. So more or less everyone is a demon. So therefore, we cannot really complain about the results of this collective demoniac mentality in the form of this hellish civilization, because we've all taken part in manifesting this collective hellish civilization. But there are, of course, powerful demons. There are little demons and there are big demons. So there are powerful demons whose interest it is to make sure that this demoniac civilization continues to expand. And so for that purpose, they want to keep everyone in ignorance. as we see mentioned in our question and answer conference a few days ago about this interesting story that has come to light about the loss of $1 billion spacecraft that NASA was sending to Mars. It is called the Mars Observer. And this spacecraft was lost from radio contact, at least that's what they say. It was lost from radio contact last August. It was announced on August 22. So, of course, this was presented in the news, the World News Reports, as a kind of straightforward thing that they sent up this very expensive spacecraft. And unfortunately, it has disappeared from the radar and radio. So what can we do? But there's a whole controversy about this, which is not being reported. And it sounds very conspiratorial. There are many such conspiracy theories floating around, like about how John F. Kennedy was killed and so on and so forth. And so often there is an element of fantasy that enters into these conspiracy stories. And the same also with this Mars Observer question. But still, the facts themselves, the actual facts themselves, are very interesting because they actually show that there is a plot on the part of the big demons to keep ordinary people in ignorance. And the background is that the last NASA space probes, called the Viking 1 and 2, that went to Mars, they took photographs of the Martian surface while orbiting. These spacecraft also landed and made some tests and took more photos. But the photos that they took in orbit, among them, there were two photos of a region of Mars called Cydonia. So in the Cydonia region, according to these photos, there are apparently artificial structures. There is a big, seems to be a, like a sphinx face or something. Looks actually like Hanuman. some huge kind of structure. And there are pyramids. Oh, here he is again. Hello. He wants something. There are pyramids, and there is something that is called the fortress also. So NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA said that these images are simply tricks of light and shadow. But then some other scientists, they took these photographs and they did computer imaging, that means computer enhancement, rather. So by computers, one can enhance photographs to make them more clear. And so from the computer enhancement, it appears that these landforms are indeed symmetrical. That would indicate that they were built by they're artificial structures built by intelligent beings. Of course, this is not proof, but there are quite a number of scientists, non-NASA scientists, who feel that there is a good case for at least investigating further if these might be evidences of some civilization that exists on Mars or used to exist on Mars. But NASA insists no. And they even submitted a report to the U.S. Senate in which they said, we have other photos taken from other angles of this Sidonia region, and they prove that these are just ordinary natural formations, and simply by the light and shadow, they appear to be artificial. But of course, NASA never released these so-called other photos. They've never been published. And later on, it was noticed in that report that NASA removed the reference to other photos. After the report was published, they took that out. So this made other scientists very suspicious as to NASA's intentions. So when this Mars Observer project was announced, and this space probe was to carry a camera 50 times more powerful than the ones the Viking probes used. So therefore this Mars mission group, group of scientists, they formed an organization called Mars Mission to force NASA to make this Mars Observer go over Sidonia again and photograph again these apparent structures. So NASA was very, very reluctant. But because this Mars Mission group is comprised of serious scientists, and the leader of them, he used to work for NASA, so they were able to get the support of politicians. So the politicians put pressure on NASA, and so NASA agreed. I said, all right, we'll make sure that the Mars Observer goes over Sidonia. But then the scientist who was in charge of the camera operating this Martian satellite camera, he said, I don't believe there's any artificial structures on Mars. And this, my mission is not to look for evidence of life on that planet. So he was more or less saying, even if the Mars Observer goes over Sidonia, I won't photograph it. So then this made a big uproar. So then another scientist, a very respected scientist named Stanley McDaniel, who's independent both of NASA or the Mars Mission group of scientists, he actually is a philosopher, and his field is the ethics of science. So he gets involved with such controversies to see which side is right. So he investigated the whole thing. And then he published a paper in which he accused NASA of deliberately avoiding to investigate further in a very valid scientific question. And indeed, in his investigation, he discovered that there is a protocol within NASA to hide any discovery of life on other planets, extraterrestrial life. There is some paper that he uncovered from 1961 in which it is said that if NASA would confirm that there is evidence of life on other planets, then this news would electrify the fundamentalist and anti-science sects. Especially the Hare Krishna sect. So they would become electrified by this news. And on the other side, the scientists and the engineers, they would be devastated. And the reason for that is very interesting. They said, because if evidence came to life that there are superior intelligence on other planets, then our own scientists here on Earth would feel very threatened, because their goal, it was clearly stated in the report, our goal as scientists is to become the masters of material nature. So if there are other forms of life who are more advanced than us, then how can we be the masters? So any such discovery has to be very systematically suppressed. So this report came to light just as the Mars Observer, it was already in space, and it was making its approach to Mars and getting ready to go into the orbit and to begin to start the photographing. So with the publishing of this report, of course, that would provide this Mars Mission Group great ammunition, and the government, there was every chance that the U.S. government would then be obliged to tell NASA that you must photograph the Cydonia region. In fact, the leader of the Mars Observer program, whose name is Dr. French, Bevan French, he debated just 2 days after this report was released. He went on television to debate with the leader of the Mars Mission Group, the two opposing groups. And he didn't do well in the debate because the Mars Mission scientists kept saying, this report shows that your policy is to keep everyone in ignorance. You have a deliberate program to hide any evidence of life on other planets. Isn't it true? And the NASA man he tried to avoid to talk about this altogether. So it appeared that NASA was backed into the corner. But then, just after this debate, which was on the national television in America, NASA announced, "Oh, sorry, now we've lost contact with our little satellite, the Mars Observer. We don't know where it is anymore." So then the Mars mission scientists, they suspect that actually contact is still there, but it's on some secret channel, and the information is all encrypted, so no one can decipher it. Anyway, this is their suspicion. We don't know. It is very likely that the satellite was lost in space, because so many others that went to Mars were also lost in space. And that would raise some other questions also. But we don't have to get into that. But anyway, the simple point that is established by this story, which is a very current story, very up to date, is that the powerful materialists, those who have influence over everyone else, the scientists, it is factually seen that they do have a deliberate program to keep everyone in ignorance. They do have a philosophy, they do have an outlook that they want to impose on everyone. And their program is to become the masters of nature, masters of the universe. I think there's some cartoon show about that. So they want to be the masters of the universe. And so any evidence or proof or cause for the common people to doubt that the scientists, NASA scientists, the big demons, can become masters of the universe, that has to be suppressed, because we need their money. They should work and pay their taxes and have full faith in us, so we can take their billions of dollars and shoot it off into space and lose it. And tell everyone, sorry, but if you'll give us another $1 billion, we can build another one and shoot that up into space. But we won't tell you what it finds out there unless it fits our program of propaganda. So this is going on quite clearly. And of course, that is an example of these gross embodied, physically embodied human being demons that we can see in society today. But Actually, the world is being controlled by much more powerful demons than they, who operate from the subtle platform. So, just as the human demons, the scientists and so on, they control the news media, they control the education and so on, the information that comes through our gross senses. So these more powerful demons who operate from the subtle platform, they're actually controlling the very function of our senses and the functions of our mind. This is the chief of these demons in this age is, of course, the personality of Kali. So the personality of Kali, he has as his ministers, his agents, personified lust and anger and greed and all other kinds of inauspicious entities. And these powerful, subtle beings, they invade our very senses and minds and make sure that we remain engaged with full enthusiasm in sinful activities. And they make sure that we have no brain power left to think of anything other than gross sense gratification. At least that is their endeavor. Just as Hiranyakashipu, when he took over the whole universe, he engaged everyone's senses in the universe in his service because he kicked the demigods out of their positions. He took over the demigods. So the demigods are actually, they're the agents of Krishna who control the functions of the senses of the other living entities in the universe. But Hiranyakashipu, he replaced them all. So everyone's senses were engaged in his service. He became for a time the supreme, not the supreme, but he became the deity predominating everyone's senses until he was removed by Lord Nrisimhadev. So and as I explained in the beginning, we are under the influence, under this demoniac influence. Why? Because we have in our own heart, as we heard yesterday, very stubborn demoniac propensities. Demoniac desires for sense gratification. We are born into this demoniac world ourselves because of these desires. So the little demons, the less powerful demons, they come under the control of the bigger demons. So then this actually makes bhakti, real bhakti, very, well, this makes it very difficult. Progress in bhakti yoga then, as long as one is under this demoniac influence. As we see, there is a humorous story from the Puranas about two devotees of Lord Shiva. So the devotees of Shiva, of course, because this devotion to the demigods is not transcendental, it is not pure, it is always mixed up with material desires. So in this so-called bhakti to demigods like Lord Shiva, one can actually see how real bhakti is thwarted, how it's prevented from actually manifesting. This enviousness, this kala, this envious propensity, which is in everyone's heart, unless it is removed, then real bhakti cannot actually flourish. So there were two devotees of Lord Shiva who were worshipping the Shiva Linga. This is a form of Lord Shiva in the form of a stone, black stone. And so they were both worshipping Lord Shiva, doing puja to this Shiva Linga. But because this propensity of enviousness was there in their hearts, and it cannot be removed by this type of materialistic worship. So, although they were doing this seva together, this puja together, they became more and more increasingly envious of one another and one another's service. So finally it came down to a big fight. Instead of serving the Shivalinga, they got into a big fight. Now, as a result of their long service to Lord Shiva, each one of these two had acquired a lot of mystic power. So when they got furious at one another, they simultaneously cursed. They each one thought of the worst curse he could make on the other. They hated one another so much. So finally, simultaneously, they pointed at each other and one said, "You become a big fat elephant." And the other one said, "You become a nasty little hairy spider." And then they had to take these forms. So there was one in a big elephant body and the other was in a spider body. And then they thought, "Oh, what have we done? Oh, we were really foolish." So then they thought, "All right, sorry. Let's continue to worship Lord Shiva." So in those forms, then the elephant was bathing the deity of Shiva, because he has this long nose, so we can suck it full of water and come and sprinkle it. And meanwhile, the spider was making a net, spider web, over the Shivalinga every day to catch any leaves or anything else that might fall down upon the linga. So he was making a canopy. It was like over the deity, we have this wooden canopy. So every day he was making a spider web canopy. But again, because of the envious propensity, then the two started to compete even in these forms. So the spider was making the web above the deity, the Shivalinga, and the elephant was coming with his nose full of water and washing the deity and also washing away the web. So the spider became angry. "I spend so much time making a nice web above the deity, and then you come and wash it all away. What is the use of what you're doing?" And then the elephant said, "What is the use of what you're doing? The deity must be bathed every day." And then they began to fight. And they got more and more angry. And then finally the spider, he jumped into the nose of the elephant, climbed up inside and began to bite him there. And the elephant went crazy and was smashing his nose and head into the rocks to kill the spider. So he killed the spider, but he also killed himself. So in this way they both killed one another. So this is such a humorous story. And it illustrates how real bhakti is thwarted by this enviousness. And so we are also warned, although this is the path of pure devotional service, pure bhakti, to worship Sri Sri Gaur Nithai, Sri Sri Radha Krishna, Lord Krishna. Devotees of Lord Krishna are forbidden to offer service which is tinged with material desires. But in order for us to come to that platform, of course, the heart must be pure. So devotees have to be diligent in their sadhana bhakti to purify their hearts of enviousness. So if we do not do this, then the devotional service that we render becomes a farce. And then also we see even the devotees of so-called devotees of Lord Krishna, they become divided from one another. There is party spirit, there are politics and mundane competition. Not that competition is wrong, but it should be transcendental competition which pleases Krishna. But if devotees are hating one another and trying to hurt one another, then what is the question of pleasing Krishna? Actually, this movement is meant, as explained here so nicely by Srila Prabhupada, this movement is meant for the benefit of everyone. It is meant to spread Krishna consciousness, pure devotional service to all living entities, not to create sects, competing sects that just fight with each other. And because they're too busy fighting with one another, turning one another into spiders and elephants and so on, they can't benefit the rest of the world. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada says here, very nicely, quoting from the song we sing, Bahir Nishringa, Hridayir Nishringa. Lord Nishringadev is Bahir, that means we're praying for his blessing, for his protection in our external activities. But also Hridayo, we're asking Lord Nishringadev to please enter our hearts so that our hearts may become cleansed of the contamination of enviousness. Because if our activities of devotional service are just external, and just going through the ritualistic motions of serving the deity, but inside our hearts are full of lust and envy, then the real bhakti, the real manifestation of bhakti will be thwarted, will be impeded, stopped. Indeed, then the external activities of devotional service are just that, just external motions with actually no transcendental significance, because they're having no auspicious influence on the world at large. Svasti astu, this is the first word of this verse. Svasti astu, let there be auspiciousness, vishvasha, throughout the whole universe. So that is automatically achieved. Actually, even by the most simple activity performed in pure devotional service. Even if a pure devotee simply chants Hare Krishna, because he's chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra purely, then that vibration pervades. It pervades the whole universe and purifies everyone. So we must perform our duties with a pure heart. So therefore, how to ensure that? We pray, Bahir Nishringa, Hridayir Nishringa. May our activities be pure both internally and externally. It's 8:30. Are there any questions? Yes. Gambling is gambling. You know, gambling includes speculation. When we gamble, that means we're taking a risk with Krishna's energy. So, if, for instance, just like this body that I have, this is Krishna's energy, Krishna has given this to me for his service, and as well as this mind. So if I let my mind wander off into some mundane, non-Krishna conscious thoughts, and I'm enjoying these thoughts, that in itself is already gambling. Because I don't know when I'm going to leave this body. So what if I leave, what if suddenly death comes for me while I'm off around the back of the moon? You see, then I have to take birth again.
So gambling automatically, this regulative principle automatically includes these subtle non-Krishna conscious speculations of the mind. So when we say, when we vow that we will not gamble, it also includes this. And it actually means we will keep, yes, we will stay on the path of truth. We will keep our minds fixed upon Krishna. Ajamida, what is your question? No question. Yes.
What is the purpose of the appearance of
Lord Buddha and Shankaracharya and Ramanuja and Madhva?
Well,
the four Vaishnava acharyas appeared. That means Ramanuja and Madhva and Vishnu Swami and Nimbarka. They appeared in the Kali Yuga. All of them took their birth in this age to reestablish from Brahma and Lakshmi and Rudra and the four Kumaras. So in the higher regions of the universe, among the demigods, it's in these four sampradayas, there is Krishna consciousness always being taught. But in the Kali Yuga, the authorized sampradayas, they appeared to disappear. So therefore these four acharyas, they came to revive them. Even to the point where, for instance, Madhvacharya, because although he accepted Achyutapreksha as his guru, Achyutapreksha was a guru in the Brahma Sampradaya, but Achyutapreksha, because of all of India had been inundated by Mayavadi philosophy, he was no longer teaching the Vaishnava philosophy of the Brahma Sampradaya. He didn't even really know what it was. He knew there was such a philosophy, but it had become lost. So therefore Madhva, he went to the Himalayas, spoke with Srila Vyasadeva and heard from him the actual Siddhanta of the Brahma Sampradaya, and he established that. So This was the purpose of these four great Vaishnava acharyas. Anything else? Yes?
You mentioned those Kali stages, and we also talk about Maya stages. So it's so that most of those people who are working like that, they are not conscious of what they are doing. It's only some few people who really know what they are.
Well, you see, there are theories, various conspiracy theories in the modern time about who's really controlling the world. You see these books circulating. Some people say it's the Rockefellers, or some, you know, they have these different ideas about who actually pulls all the strings. But in actual fact, it's the personality of Kali who pulls the strings. The strings are being pulled from the subtle platform. And these grossly embodied human beings, they're all puppets. Of course, there are those who are very much more powerful than the others. So they're more situated in the demoniac purpose than others. But you see, the demoniac mentality is this, that each demon is thinking he is supreme. Each demon is thinking, I'm the one. I'm the one who knows what's going on. But in actual fact, they're not. They're always being controlled by, ultimately, by Krishna. So, the demons in human society, yeah, there are some who are very wealthy and very influential, and they even think themselves that I am the one who's controlling the whole world. whatever I say, everyone must do. But they themselves are being controlled. In this Kali Yuga, they're being controlled by the subtle, very, very powerful demons like Kali. And Kali is, he's controlling. Why? Because in this age, Krishna allows him to do his dirty work. So ultimately, it's Krishna who's controlling the whole situation. Yes?
Anyway, to pacify the enrichment.
Yeah, one must accept spiritual master and serve under his direction. This is the way. Because spiritual master knows the art of uprooting the sinful material desires from the heart of the disciple. And the spiritual master does this so long as the disciple is properly engaged under spiritual master's direction. Actually, it is by instruction that the spiritual master does this. So as long as the disciple is maintaining the attitude of the proper attitude of disciple, then the spiritual master's instructions go into his heart and uproot all these lust, anger, and so on in the... Anything else? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.